Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima.
We welcome in Jason Lloyd, whose in-laws, if you want to talk about congratulating on success, Jason's in-laws have an indoor pool. Not an in-ground, not just an in-ground. No, no, it's indoors. It has ceiling fans above it.
Is it above ground, though, indoors?
That'd be something else, but it's actually in-ground and indoors. Congratulations on your in-law's success.
Are you still on this?
Yeah. Why wouldn't I be?
Is this going to be something we're talking about 5 years from now?
No, because you'll have your own indoor pool.
Shut up.
Aren't you building one right now?
A house, not an indoor pool.
Does it bother you that you paid so much more in lumber and lumber prices are starting to fall?
You have an indoor house.
No.
It doesn't bother you? Wow, money must be no object to you. Congratulations on all your success. You're doing very well, Jason.
I mean, do you want to turn this into a financial thing or do you want to talk about sports?
Dave Ramsey joins us on the show right now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
You know what I'm doing right now, actually?
What?
I am hightailing it to the vet with my dog's pee. I caught dog pee in a urine sample tube this morning.
Oh, my God.
That's my day.
You applied for a job here?
I have an hour. I have an hour to get it there. So I'm doing this from the car while I'm speeding my dog's pee to the vet.
If they needed me to get dog pee, I'd probably just get a new dog.
Yeah, at that point.
I caught it in the tube. I was very proud of myself.
How old's the dog?
7.
Yeah, it's been a good run.
No, you understand. My wife loves this dog more than she loves me.
That's why you just get a new dog. Then she could love the other dog. And so you're still not under the gun. Anyway, it's been 5 years since Cavaliers won a championship, Jason. You're close to the situation, so I'm not going to ask your personal feelings. But the people you interact with, you do interact with a lot of fans. You are a regular guy, no matter how crazy I want to make you seem. How much do you think the fans have changed in their opinion of the 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers?
If I'm being honest, I come across a lot of people that try to like diminish the championship now, and it really kind of surprises me. Like, what world are you on? Do you want to go back to 2015 and 2014 and 2013 and what life was like? I don't know why. It just because LeBron left again, it just feels like so many people want to dismiss that or diminish it. I think people, it's obviously something people should cherish for the rest of their life, and I have tremendous memories of that year, and I would think that. And maybe I'm speaking for just a vocal minority, but I just come across, I don't know. Am I wrong? Do you guys understand what I'm saying? Do you ever come across people that like sort of diminish it?
Yeah, all the time.
Right?
I'm not kidding. No, I'm not making a joke. Yeah, all the time.
It's so strange. I don't understand it.
But I do think that's like a 5% minority, Jason, because somebody else gave this to me, and I wish I could find them and give them credit for it. The anti-NBA or the anti-Cleveland Cavaliers championship folks, it's the same as like a CrossFit person or a vegan. Like the old joke, how do you find the vegan in a crowd of 5,000 people? It's the guy who can't shut up about being a vegan. Like every time we talk about the Cavs, anytime Lyman mentions the Cavs, any of us, I don't watch the NBA. Like I could be talking about, I could be telling people how to put together trusses and floor joists and all the other things about building a house, and somebody would get in and go, hey, I know you might want to use these type of wood screws and stuff. I don't watch the NBA either. Like they just want to make sure that I know that they hate LeBron and they hate the Cavs and that championship meant nothing to them and that they don't watch the NBA. It's a little odd.
I hope that it's a very small percentage, because that to me remains the greatest NBA finals in the history of the NBA, quite frankly. When you talk about the 3-1 deficit, when you talk about the team that they beat, 73-9, and everything that went into it, and the Draymond suspension and the drama, and LeBron with the Undertaker shirt, and LeBron hearing about Clay's comments from the podium. I mean, we could do a week's worth of shows just on that series, and I'm not even, like, exaggerating. There was so much packed into those 2 weeks, and then we haven't even gotten to the parade and JR running around shirtless for weeks at a time. It was the pinnacle of Cleveland sports, as far as I'm concerned, between what the Indians were doing at the time and the Cavs championship. I will always cherish that summer.
It was the Monday after what would have been game 4, and they were down 3-1. And, like, one of the first calls we took out of the box was a guy, like, he basically was, it wasn't even basic, he asked, because I asked him, he said, yeah, was asking us to talk him into saying that the Cavs had a chance, and we're like, man, we're sorry, we can't think of a way. Okay, and then by the end of the next week, we were champions.
Well, so it's funny you mentioned it, you put it that way, because so they go down 3-1 at home, obviously. And I remember Kevin's locker was in the corner, and I was talking to Kevin. And I said, you know, if you guys can figure out a way to get 5, to win game 5 out there, you just need to figure out 5, and you can win this. And I said, because there's no way you're losing 6 at home. And he goes, no way. And I said, and if you get to a game 7, I'll take my chances with that guy. And obviously I pointed at LeBron's corner. I said, I'll take my chances with that guy over anybody else in the league. And he said, for sure. I said, if you just have to figure out a way to get game 5. I don't know if you can win game 5, but if you can figure out how to get game 5, you can win the series. And then Draymond gets suspended and everything changed.
Jason, how do you think those players individually and everybody involved with that championship, how do you think they look back at it if they put in perspective where they are today? I mean, LeBron did win a title last year, but 2 out of the 3 years have been a disaster. Ty Lue, we'll still see. Jury's still out on what happens this year. When we talk about Kevin Love, it's been obviously a disaster, and he's been in Cleveland. But when you go through the list of everybody involved with that, heck, how about the GM, which is now potentially on the hot seat in New Orleans? You know, David, it's not going so well. How do you think those guys look back at 2016?
A lot harder to build a champion when you don't have 7 first-round picks to trade over 3 years, huh?
I knew that, like, was coming.
I mean, I've said for years you got way too much credit for that. Way too much credit for that. The only thing that David was really good at, that I did not give him enough credit for at the time was maintaining relationships and sort of keeping the peace between LeBron and Kyrie, but I'm not going to go off on that tangent. When you talk about those guys, will always view Cleveland with a special place in their heart. And I talked to Channing about this. Actually, I talked to him on the station. I was filling in one day, and Channing was on it as a guest. And I said, you know, you weren't here very long in the grand scheme of your career. He was only here for a minute. Channing played for a long time, played for a lot of teams. He was all over the league. But he said, like, Cleveland will always be so special to me because of what it represents, and because it's where I won a championship, and I was a champion there, and obviously he's beloved here. Same with RJ, all of those guys. Even I think Kyrie will come around one day and really sort of appreciate what he had here and the way the fans loved him, even when he was just not totally receptive to it. Obviously for LeBron, that championship means more to him than any other. I think when he retires, I don't know if he can say that now. Maybe he would, I don't know, but after he retires, I'm sure he would say that. That this city, and Ty's the same way. You know, Ty will always love Cleveland. Ty, you know, I mean, Ty jokes all the time about all the money Dan Gilbert gave him. He loves Dan. He loves the city of Cleveland. So when you have the pinnacle of your success in one spot here, in your career in one spot, you're always going to look fondly on that. That team will always be revered. Those guys will always be cheered. You know, RJ came back right before the pandemic. RJ came back on the broadcast of the Nets. They showed him on the Jumbotron, and the place went crazy. It'll always be like that for all of them, and even for Kevin. And I know, and I've said this before, I know the relationship has sort of soured a little bit. Fans have sort of turned on Kevin because of the contract and everything else, the way things have gone. In time, when enough time passes, that's all going to go away, and he's going to be cheered and loved and remembered for the championship way more than any of the crap that's gone on since then.
Jason Lloyd joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I think the Browns being good have made for Cleveland fans to be a little sharper. I think they've demanded more of the Indians. I think they've demanded more of the Cavs. I think it's woken some people up towards the Cavs and asking for more out of them. But I also think for the entirety of the NBA, it's not an anti-NBA stance I have. But I look at where Anthony is. Anthony takes in the entire league every single day. And I mean every day, checking box scores. Jason, you may do the same. I'm not sure. I used to do that. I don't do it as much as I did because, like, I look at a Zion Williamson situation 10 years ago. I go, this is rough. Why are we doing this? How can we fix this problem in the NBA? And I'm going, yeah, I got my championship. I don't care. Sucks to be you. It's changed the way I look at the league.
Well, and the league's only getting – it's only going to get more and more like this, not less and less. Like, the players run the league. And, you know, some people may applaud that, some people may hate that, but that's the reality of it, and that's not going away. That's going to continue. And the player empowerment era, or whatever you want to call it, is here to stay. And, you know, I mean, Vard and I have been talking for months about Zion was unhappy in New Orleans. It was the worst-kept secret in the NBA. I don't know why it took – well, I kind of do know why it took us so long to write it. But, like, everybody in the NBA knew that was going on with Zion. And, I've thought for a while he's going to wind up in New York. He's a CAA guy. Leon Rose is in New York. Zion Williamson's going to New York. And I know every star is rumored to be going to New York, and it happens every year. But I'm telling you, I think there's a lot of merit to this one, that he'll be with the Knicks, and then we can have this conversation all over again.
With the Knicks, within how long?
Well, I mean, New Orleans still controls his contract for the next few years, so it depends on how ugly it gets. Mm-hmm. Like, New Orleans is an absolute tire fire. It has been all year. And the J.J. Redick podcast should have been the first clue to what was going on. You know, and J.J., I've never heard a current active player go on a podcast and just absolutely flame his organization the way that J.J. did New Orleans this year. And that should have been the first clue to fans, like, okay, what's going on in New Orleans? It has been a tire fire all season long. And you can – I mean, look, at Dallas is the same way. The Mavericks are the same way. There's organizations – you know, and – it's funny because this is probably going back. This is back when I was on the NBA beat, and I was talking to a GM, not a Cavs GM, a different, and we were just sort of laughing. And he said, you know, people would be amazed if they knew how screwed up, use a different word, and dysfunctional so many teams are in the NBA. We are no different than any other company in the world that's got their issues and their personality problems, and this guy doesn't like that guy, and this guy's not getting along. And the NBA is no different. It's worth more. It's a bigger company, and they're worth more money. But they're just as jacked up and messed up as any other place that you work or anybody works.
I still think you take in the NBA a lot because you're able to recognize the J.J. Redick story, which I think a lot of people don't even recognize, which I disagreed with him. You said you wanted to trade. He's not – I'm sorry, Griffin is not beholden to trade you exactly where you need to go. That's where I'm at. I'm sorry. Go right on ahead, Tone.
No, I think there's a lot more to it than that. I think, Fair. You know, Griff kind of told him, according to JJ's version, Griff told him ahead of time, like, listen, come on in. If it doesn't work, you know, we're going to get you someplace you want to be. And that's not how it went.
All right, Chase, obviously this draft has been talked about a lot. It could be top five, top six, whatever. We're hoping for number one in Kate Cunningham. But with all that said, I hope people understand this isn't adding Kevin Durant. This isn't adding, you know, LeBron. I don't know if it's adding Luka. But does this mean a trajectory-changing draft choice if they get number one?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I understand what you're saying. Is it a franchise transcendent greatest of all time player? No, it's pretty hard to put that on a kid, you know, before the draft. But is it a draft that could change the trajectory of the Cavs instantly? Yeah. If they get number one, yeah. You know, now I think some of this other stuff starts to fit a little bit better. Really, anywhere in the top five, you know, that's pretty well been established that there's a pretty steep drop after five. I was talking to Scout a couple weeks ago, loved Cade Cunningham, loved Evan Mobley, was kind of down on Jalen Suggs, which surprised me. Thought Jalen was a little bit overrated. But really, anywhere in that top five, look, the Cavs need athletic playmaking wings. I've said it for years. That's what this league is built on. The league is built on guys who can dribble, pass, shoot, triple threats, guys who can guard multiple positions. That's huge now in today's NBA. The Cavs have none of those players. Zero. None. And, you know, Isaac Okoro is really more of a two. I think if everyone's being honest and realistic, he's probably a two. You know, I've made my views on Colin perfectly clear over the years. There's no need to relitigate that.
Darius, I think, could be a very good point guard in this league, but they need a three. And really, they could use a four who plays like a three as well. And that's really what's going to change this team, is when they start getting those guys who can guard multiple spots, who can do multiple things. That's what's really going to start to tie all this together.
If the Browns tomorrow were to offer Baker Mayfield a contract north of Wentz, north of Goff, but pretty much commensurate with what those guys got 2 years ago, should he take it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think he should. I think he would.
Whoa!
Why is that a whoa?
You think he would?
Yeah.
So you think he's changing the narrative and saying that he's betting on himself only because he hasn't been offered a contract?
Pretty much.
Whoa!
I mean, listen. The Cavs put $120 million in front of Kevin Love after they already put $120 million in front of Kevin Love, and he took the money. If you put that kind of money in front of a kid who hasn't had that kind of money before, he's going to take it.
Yes. On what planet does Dan Gilbert and Andrew Berry ever think the same way?
No. No, you're missing what I'm saying. From the player's perspective, Kevin had already made $120 million, and he was offered another $120 million, and he took it, even though it probably wasn't exactly where he wanted to be. I mean, it was great with the construction scene and all that, and it was all warm and cheery and heartfelt. But, you know, I've told you guys for years, when LeBron left, Kevin was out too. But the Cavs threw so much money at him, he's like, all right, I'll stay. So if you do that with a guy who already has made his money and you want to give him that much money, what do you think is going to happen when you give that much money to someone who has not made that much money? Like, and, you know, in the Mayfield family, this is not, you know, Johnny Manziel came from like some oil money. There is some money in that family. And I'm not saying the Mayfields are poor by any means. They're not. But I just, you know, when I was down in Texas in Austin doing the story on Baker, I was talking to his high school coach who made that difference, the differentiation there, whatever word I'm looking for, that the Manziel money was a lot different than the Baker money. And Baker came from like just a normal Texas family, really good people. The coach was raving about his mom. But it's just like he hasn't had that type of money. I don't know what he made it.
I've seen that house. I saw that house the night he got drafted. That looks like a house that'd be right next door to the Lloyds in Avon Lake.
Oh, shut up. All the houses in Texas look like that. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
congratulations on all your success.
Oh, my God. There's difference in the money. And so I think if the Browns put that much money in front of him, yeah, he's going to take it.
Real quick. There have been those who've called Jared Allen, Isaac Okoro, Darius Garland, and Colin Sexton the Cavs' core four. What would you call them?
Building blocks. They're not the core. They're not a core. That's not a – that's. I mean, maybe it's the core because that's the core that they have on the team.
You were supposed
right
to say the snore four. The no, abhor, I mean, four.
No. I mean, Jared Allen's a good player.
The
chore
to watch four.
No, sorry, listen, ahead. Here's where I come down on this. Jared Allen's a really good player, and they're going to pay him a lot of money. They're going to have a lot of money tied up in guards and centers. And we already talked about the importance of wings in this league, but Jared Allen is a really good player. I think he's going to be here for a long time, even if he doesn't – I shouldn't say that. Regardless of what other offer he gets, the Cavs have the opportunity to match it. That's why it was important to go out and trade for him rather than sign him as a restricted free agent. They're going to sign him. You know, Darius, I think, has the potential to be a very good point guard. Is he going to be elite top five? You know, I'm not going to go that far, but I think he could be a very good NBA point guard. He's got to get bigger. He gets pushed around too much defensively. He's got to put some muscle on. You know, Colin to me is a bench player, and Isaac, we don't know what he is. So I'm not going to call that a core four, but I think that they're nice building blocks to have.
All right, Jason, we'll talk to you around, what, July 1st when your next Cavs hit piece comes out.
Oh, what a rotten way to end it. I tell you
what. I'm a rotten person. That's how I end things. Jason, thank you.
See you guys.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.